Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Farrell-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Today, our guest is Dr. Jan Fried, and she's going to be talking today about what she calls the secret ingredient, the breadcrumb legacy. Welcome, Jan, to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
No, we're excited to have you on. So you have this new book called The Breadcrumb Legacy, and tell us a little bit about what you came up with the idea, what the concept is about, and then we'll get deep into it.
Sure. I wrote a book that came out in 2013. It was published by Association for Training and Development, and the title is Leading with Wisdom, Sage Advice from 100 Experts. Now, I really interviewed more than 100, but my editor liked 100. But people such as Marshall Goldsmith, Warren Bennis, I was able to interview him while he was still alive, Sally Helgeson, Margaret Wheatley. I mean, the list goes on. And out of that book, I analyzed the data and the qualitative data, and the chapters became themes. They reflected the themes in the research. And one of the themes that resonated when I was doing workshops and speaking was the chapter, Leaders Live Their Legacy. So I've done several workshops on leadership legacy. And so then I decided to kind of do a deep dive into this topic because it's become quite a hot topic and became top of mind really during COVID, you know, as unfortunately, as we experienced way too many deaths and tragedies and illness and industries dying and companies dying. And so this whole idea of legacy, you know, what difference are we making? What difference are we making as a company, as an individual? And so then I did a deep dive, interviewed more people, went back to some of the same people just to focus on this idea of legacy. And in my workshops, I would often say, well, when do we leave our legacy? And people would say, well, when we leave. You know, and I'd say, well, leave what? Well, when we leave the earth, when we die, when we leave a career, when we leave a job. And I'd say, well, what about when I leave this conversation, when I leave this workshop, when I leave this podcast interview? So I came up with this concept that we're leaving our legacy in bite-sized pieces all the time, every day.
And when people talk about a legacy, that's a big topic. And so do you think that the word itself, the word legacy, is potentially part of the way people don't think about it in short-term views?
Exactly. I mean, I think this concept makes it very reachable and understandable for everyone. We don't have to be rich and famous. We don't have to have our name on a building. But we are leaving a legacy, whether we know it or not, and it's not always positive. So my whole focus is on being very intentional and conscious about the difference that we're making. You know, we're leaving something behind all the time. So what is it we're leaving behind? And why not be more intentional about it?
Well, you mentioned that this legacy, this breadcrumb legacy, is how great leaders live a life worth remembering. You know, when I wonder when you talk to people in organizations, if they say, well, I recognize that it's part of culture to want to try to, you know, have big wins, have small wins, have wins within an organization. And little bite-sized pieces do add up. I mean, incrementalism does right. work in terms of the way that it goes through. But how can a leader or somebody who's maybe junior or maybe senior, we'll talk about both, really make a difference at that type of level, especially if they already have a history?
Well, I think that's a very good question. What I would say is, I think when you think of this whole idea of breadcrumb legacy, this concept, to me, it's like your true north. It's like your moral compass. It can keep you on the right path. And so it is, in fact, I was listening to something the other day, and this woman was defining legacy. And she said, she looks at it as, instead of leaving something behind, what are you leaving forward? Meaning for the next generation. And I really like that idea that, you know, what difference do you want to make today that's really going to improve life for others in the future? And again, these can be small things. So it's really, how do you want to be remembered and then live your life in that way?
You know, when people think of legacy, they probably think of things as simple as, well, making money, making a new concept. Mm-hmm. They think about, well, accomplishments. And I guess one of the questions I have is, if you're talking about it on a small scale, I guess what would you say is that a simple example of something that somebody could do or say or make a difference in on a much smaller scale that could be considered a legacy?
Well, I think, and your focus right now, David's in the workplace, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I stress, and there a chapter in my book is called Who Will Help You Move the Couch? But it's all about relationships. And I think the pandemic made us realize that, you know, loneliness was an epidemic before the pandemic, and it's only gotten worse. And so this whole idea of relationships, people, you know, while we can be connected 24/7, we really are disconnected. These are very shallow relationships that people often have. And so I think, you know, a leader at any level, I think the most important thing they could do is just listen and ask questions. You know, I'm doing a big project right now for a manufacturing firm, and they just actually settled a strike. And we interviewed, I'm part of a team, and we interviewed every union worker, and they're unionized. And almost to a person, they said, you know, our management, they don't even know us. They treat us like numbers, not people. You know, so this whole idea of building relationships and getting to know people, and how was your weekend? I mean, you know, talking about something other than just goals and productivity. And I mean, to me, listening, asking questions, and being sincere about wanting to really build relationships. I say that leadership is not a position or title, it's a relationship. And I think if you keep that in mind, then every interaction, every conversation, every encounter is a breadcrumb that you could use to build a relationship.
And of course, we're talking about the breadcrumb legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering, a book by Jan Fried, and she's here today with us to talk about it. Jan, you know, I 100% agree that relationships are the key in regards to leadership and management and supervision, and every little conversation matters. Mm-hmm. But here's what I hear a lot of, and I'm sure you do as well. That's great. That's nice. It's important to say hello and all that, but we have things to do and we're running short-staffed as it is. We're dealing with an issue of we don't have enough people. We have too much work. And yes, I can be nice, Jan, as a leader. I can be very friendly. I can do all those things, but we still got to get production done. How does one balance between the two?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think it has to take more time. I think it's being very careful and again, one of my favorite words is intentional about what you say, when you say it, how you say it. So I don't think it has to take more time. And I think people will be more productive. Likeability is important. And I think people will be more productive if they feel like somebody cares about them. And the research is showing that, whether you're looking at emotional intelligence, you know, the research on empathy and compassion, and all of these soft skills that I really say are the hard skills, all of these skills are more important since the pandemic.
There's no question that being a caring leader or somebody who cares about their team, cares about themselves, cares about the organization, cares about success, cares about everybody's success, is the key. And I agree with you that certainly when you're talking about, you know, people work, they work to live, not live to work, right? Mm-hmm. So when you put that together and say the pandemic certainly made people understand the dynamic of what they were working, how they were working, and how they could do it potentially a different way, mm-hmm. albeit not all industries, but many of them. Mm-hmm. You know, what gave you the idea to write this book?
Well, it's actually my sixth book, only my second as sole author. The others were co-authored. And I come out of higher education. So my first career was a college professor in teaching business management leadership. And I just, after getting my PhD, you know, it's kind of an expectation, you'll do some research and some writing. And I just got the bug. And I just love it. I mean, you know, right now I'm saying this will be my last book. I don't know. But I love the reading. I love the writing. And if I could have anybody's job in the whole world, I would want to be Terry Gross on National Public Radio, NPR. I love to interview people. I just love to learn. And I loved it. And I have a podcast myself called Becoming a Sage. It's a monthly podcast mm-hmm. where I interview people about wisdom, about leadership and life. So I just love that interviewing. So the research, it just is something that gets me in the flow.
Well, you know, the work you're doing is certainly related to making sure that employees and leaderships get along better. It focuses on retention, it focuses on engagement, it focuses on culture, it focuses on planning, all the things that are dynamic within a leadership organization. If I was somebody who said, okay, I want to dig a little deeper in this area, where would I start?
Well, first of all, you know, regardless of your level of leadership, I say the most important person to lead is yourself. So it always starts with personal awareness, personal development. Leadership development, in my mind, is personal development. So it starts with your sphere of influence. It starts with yourself and then your sphere of influence. And my definition of a leader is someone who's in the position to influence the lives of others. So I consider teachers, parents, coaches, pastors, anyone who's in a position to influence the lives of others is a leader. So I would start with your sphere of influence and say, all right, how do I want to be remembered? Every interaction, every conversation is important. How do I want that to go? And really being having your antennas up that you're very self-aware. And I would also say do more listening than talking.
I think that's a key thing that many people don't do a great job of, mm-hmm. the truth, right? Because we're expected as leaders to have answers. We're expected mm-hmm. as supervisors to provide guidance. We're expected to say the right things and mm-hmm. and be careful of what we say, and because we're affecting the organization, we're affecting people's lives. Mm-hmm. Do you think we in today's thoughts and society, are we too careful?
I don't think you can be too careful. Yeah. I don't think you can be too careful. It's just very important to be present, pay attention. In fact, I think pay attention are two key words. You know, pay attention to reactions, to what's going on around you. No, I don't think we can be too careful.
Yeah, you know, it's after the pandemic, everybody has been very, you know, there's a lot of challenges out there mm-hmm. in the workforce today. And I think one of the things that I see is that people are hesitant to tell people things or hesitant to have too many conversations for fear of what the response is going to be. And mm-hmm. I'm just curious where you felt in terms of, you know, having a legacy. I think today people are concerned about what their legacy might be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you bring up a good point. You don't want to ask too many personal questions. But, you know, I think it's fine to say, you know, how are things going? Or, you know, I say the most important question for leaders to ask is, how can I support you? You know, how can I support you? How are things going? You know, let me know how I can help. You know, so you don't want to get too personal. But on the other hand, whoever tends to have more power in the relationship should, I think, open the conversation and be the one asking more of the open-ended questions.
That makes a lot of sense. And of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Today, I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it? That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you. Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. And, of course, podcast on all national podcast channels. We appreciate you. Be educated. Get your education here at the HR Power Hour. We appreciate you coming through. All right. Okay. Today, we're talking with Jan Fried. She has written a great book, Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live, A Life Worth Remembering. You know, I always think to myself as I get further on in my years, you know, sure. 29 for the X amount of time, about the legacy factor, right? The fact that legacy is something we think about probably more as we move along in our careers. And you know, I guess we don't talk really about that much when we're in our younger years. We don't use those terms and those words. And I love in your bio, you have that you believe it is hard to be a good leader if you're not a good person. Mm-hmm. That leadership development is about personal development, and that the most important person to lead is yourself. You know, you mentioned you're also in education. How do people start thinking about legacy when they're 20, 25, 30 years old and they're new leaders starting out there? How would you encourage them to start using that term?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. Athletes, particularly, well, athletes at any level, but I'm talking professional and, you know, Olympic level athletes have to think about legacy, or they think about legacy and they have to think about what's next before most of us, because they age out, particularly like women gymnasts, you know, can age out at 18, you know, so what are you going to do next? If you think about like, I play tennis, but I'm not very good, but I like Roger Federer and Nadal, and they've been at the top for so long. And now Roger retired last year, Serena retired. And I loved how Serena said she was not retiring. She was evolving away from tennis. And I think that's a really good phrase that all of us could think about. We're not retiring. You know, one of the things I say in my podcast, Becoming a Sage, is we're not retiring from life, but we're moving on to something next, something else. And what is it we want to move on to? And I say it takes about 5 years to really kind of figure that out, plant the seeds, make the connections to move on to what's next in life. And all of this is kind of built into legacy thinking. I call it legacy thinking because, you know, what do you want? How do you want to be remembered? What do you want to do next? What's the vision for the next phase of life? And, you know, when you're in college, that's just as appropriate. You know, if you're a senior, junior, senior, what's a vision for yourself in the next 5 to 10 years? Then you get into a career. Well, you may start a family. You know, what's the vision for the next 5 to 10 years? You know, we kind of always keep doing that until we kind of reach the end of our career. And then it's like, whoops, you know, or we get an early buyout, you know, to retire early, or we've made a lot of money, so we want to retire. You know, I think everybody should be thinking about what's next. And one way to do that is to think, I always tell people to look for role models. Who's living a life that looks attractive to you and why? What are they doing and why does that look attractive? And I think we should all be thinking about what's next.
You know, in the book, you talk about your first chapter. You say, what breadcrumbs are you leaving behind? Mm-hmm. And in here, you also have these boxes of which you talk about. We talk about breadcrumb box, some examples and so forth. What's your favorite example and what does that mean? What breadcrumbs are you leaving behind?
Well, again, it's the whole idea that we're leaving our legacy in bite-sized pieces every day in small ways. And it doesn't, yes, these bite-sized pieces accumulate and they could be lost overnight if we make major, you know, faux pas. But they accumulate. And so legacy isn't just at the end of life. And because it's kind of interesting. A couple of years ago, I read this article about Tom Jones, the singer, you know, and he was turning 80, I think. And he says in the article, well, I'm 80. It's time to think about my legacy. Or is it too late to think about my legacy? And what I was thinking about as I read that article is, first of all, he's been building a legacy all the way along. Now, he may or may not like that legacy. And in fact, I was reading something not too long ago where somebody said, you know, I still have time left to change my legacy because I'm not happy with it. That's true. I mean, it's probably never too late, but it's going to take more work. If we're intentional on a daily basis, then I think we will be happy with how we're being remembered.
You made a good point there, right? Is that it is work. This is not, it is not a simple thing to do this. And I think that makes it more difficult, right? To say, am I going to put the effort? Am I going to be intentional? Right. What does that mean for me today, this week, this month, this year, this next decade? And how much feedback should one get on this? That's another part of the equation that I'll ask about is, you know, how much do you talk to others about this?
Well, I'm talking to others all the time about this. In terms of feedback, I think the best leaders are always looking for ways to get better. So I wrote two books, actually, co-authored two books on continuous improvement in higher education. And my students, I used to say to my students, you know, I have continuous improvement in my bloodstream. You know, if you've got ways to improve this course for you, I want to know what they are. But, and I said, you could tell me anything, but you can't say this is a lousy course unless you tell me how to make it better. And so students really, once they realize there's no retribution, they started giving me all kinds of ideas of how the course might be better. And I think leaders, you know, again, teachers are leaders, but any leader, any person who's in the position to influence the lives of others, you know, asking and sincerely wanting to know how could this be better. And to me, it's all about empowerment too. The people who know best how to do a job are the people doing it. So asking for input. And when you've created a culture where they know that you really want it and that you will listen. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do everything. You know, I used to say to my students, you know, they want less papers, less reading. And I'd say, well, I'm not going to do that. And I'll tell you why. You don't get better at something by doing it less. So we're talking skill building. So, you know, again, I think if leaders create the culture where they're open to feedback, they don't get defensive, they listen, and they respond, you know, with why they will or will not make, you know, some changes. I think that really adds to some loyalty, employee loyalty. I think people really care about that.
We're talking with Dr. Jan Fried, and she has a book, Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering. In your book, you talk chapter four about become a nobody. Explain that.
Well, most of us don't walk around thinking, oh, you know, my goal in life is to become a nobody. The chapter is really about ego, controlling the ego and not letting the ego control you. And so much of our life, and I say because of our reward system, whether it's in school or in work, we get rewarded for being a somebody. We get rewarded for accomplishments, for achievement, for excelling. And all that's great and wonderful. But we've seen leaders, we've seen the dark side of leadership, the bad side of leadership, sometimes called the shadow, overtake some leaders. And if they're not aware of it, it can turn into a toxic environment. I don't think people wake up in the morning and say, you know, today I'm going to be a bad leader. But when I ask in workshops, how many of you have worked under the influence of a bad leader? Hands just shoot up. Now, again, it could have been a bad teacher, a bad coach, whatever. Hands just shoot up. And so the idea is becoming a nobody is about really recognizing when your ego's out of control. And it manifests itself in behaviors such as greed, envy, overly competitive, micromanaging, defensiveness. All of these are characteristics that tell us our ego is kind of getting out of control. And when we are not aware of that, we can create a toxic environment, and it could even be our major downfall. I'll give you some current examples. Sam Friedman Bank Friedman of crypto, you know, just exploded. Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos, you know, is going to jail along with her, you know, business partner. You know, years ago, it was Enron, Ken Lay, you know, the smartest guys in the room. You know, again, greed just taking over. Adam Newman, he's kind of maybe recovered a little bit from WeWork. But all of these are examples of just letting the ego run wild and causing a lot of heartache for people and creating a toxic environment. So that's what the chapter is about. It's really about ego. And becoming a nobody is about keeping your ego in check.
That makes perfect sense. You know, can you give me an example of how somebody could use this book as a roadmap to bringing forward an intentional life of doing the right work with breadcrumbs and moving forward. How could somebody use this book for that example?
Wonderful question. First of all, it could be used for personal development. So the book changed my life. And I think about the chapters, I think about the themes all the time. And I'm always looking for other examples, other bread box ingredients, you know. So it can be used personally. I think if a leader, you're in a position to influence the lives of others, once you read this book, then you will, I think, function differently. I think you'll treat people differently. It could be used as a department or maybe as a senior leadership team book club. Read it and discuss it as a senior leadership team, because truly a lot of it is about culture. That's another way you could use a book. You mentioned earlier that at the end of each chapter, I have ingredients as to how to implement or execute some of the ideas in the chapter. And some of those ingredients could be used with departments, divisions, as a team. So those are really useful examples.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I want to go back to something I said before. You mentioned it says it again in your bio, it's hard to be a good leader if you're not a good person. Boy, good person. That could be defined an awful lot of ways, right? Because, you know, the definition of good, mm-hmm. And I know this is probably a controversial statement, but the truth is that today the definition of good is whatever I want it to be. Yeah. So can you explain what you mean by good person? Because I think that it would be helpful for the audience to understand.
Yeah. That's a tough question, but very worthwhile to ponder. When I make that statement and I include it in the book, what comes to my mind is integrity, a person of integrity. You know, so to me, good means, can I trust this person? You know, am I a person who can be trusted? Do I have integrity? If I say I'm going to do something, do I follow through? So I guess if I had to answer in one word, I would say an integrity, a person of integrity. And it's interesting. My husband is a wealth advisor and he's been a Warren Buffett follower for decades. And Warren Buffett likes to say that when he looks to hire, he said he looks for three things: integrity, intelligence, and energy. And he said, if they don't have integrity, then you want them dumb and lazy, because he said, without integrity, you don't want them. You don't want to hire them if they don't have integrity, because he said, you know, again, if you just go back to the CEOs, the young CEOs that have tumbled recently, you know, they were highly intelligent, very energetic. But when they lack integrity, it all came tumbling down.
No, it's very true. And of course, you're all listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. I'm David Chulo, your host, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, the Healthcare Purchase Alliance, Paper Trails, and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. and we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plotto and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day. Starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio, podcasts on all major podcast channels, and of course, a News Talk, WLOB, right here in Maine. We are talking with Dr. Jan Fried today. We're talking about her book, Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering. You know what, Jan, I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about any chapter in your book which you have the most fun talking about. Why is it? And what do you think people will take away from it?
Okay. Well, you know, we talked earlier about how people often think of legacy at the end of their life. And so one of the things that kind of emerged in my last book, Leading with Wisdom, is this whole idea of I need to be teaching students, because I was full-time teaching undergraduates at that time. I need to be teaching students and in my leadership workshops, people about grief, dying, and loss. And this was a really strong theme. And so that's kind of integrated into my last book. And I would, at the time, I said, well, I don't understand this. What do you mean? They said, well, you know, 2008, financial crisis, industries died, companies died, people lost positions, people were suffering a lot of loss. Well, with this book, Breadcrumb Legacy, death and dying is a whole chapter, and it's called Embracing Death. And actually, I gave a TED talk in 2021, TEDx talk called Embracing Death, Seeing Life Through a Different Lens, and that can be found on YouTube. And I would encourage your listeners to look at it because it's gotten almost 40,000 views. But I wish it were 40 million, but it's only gotten 40,000. But it's been very well received. And the whole idea is I talk about how I developed a whole course. Now I teach a graduate leadership course for the University of Iowa. And I do this exercise with students. And we talk a lot in the course about death, dying, and grief. Because if leaders don't understand their own coping mechanisms, how can they help those who work for them? And all of this has become even more important as a result of the pandemic. So again, people were dying, industries were dying, companies were closing, people were losing jobs, and death became front and center. So I have an exercise, and what's interesting is I started this exercise in about 2008. Now in 2008, life and the world was different. I have students write their own eulogy, not obituary, but eulogy. And in 2008, there was a difference. Obituaries tended to focus on what people do, their achievements, and eulogies tend to focus on their being, who people are, their character. Anymore, they're sounding more and more the same. But I do like the idea of eulogy because how do you want to be remembered again? Mm-hmm. And I do this with 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, you know, the average age in my graduate students are probably 30 to 35. And everybody says at the end, that at first they think this is a really odd assignment because it's mandatory. They have to share it and it's not graded. So there's no right or wrong, you know, and no feedback, no comments. They just do it. And it's done at the end of class. But when I introduce the assignment, which is early in the semester, you know, they're thinking this is very strange, very odd. But at the end, they're like, this is the most meaningful thing I've done. Because again, any of us could die at any time. We're not guaranteed a long life. So it's a very meaningful exercise. So I have a whole chapter in Breadcrumb Legacy about death, dying, grief, why it's important. I'm a hospice volunteer, actually myself, and I recommend everyone to go through training to be a volunteer, and you don't have to volunteer. But the training is really leadership development because of what you learn about yourself. But I find this chapter very, very powerful and very, very significant to living a life that matters.
That is a powerful statement because anybody who's gone through the hospice process understands that they're a critical role mm-hmm. in that situation. Do you have an example of a leader who has gone through this process that you've taken them through and has found success or how it's changed the way that they've led their team or themselves?
Well, it's interesting because I use this information with coaching clients. I use it in workshops. I use it with senior leadership teams, you know, often integrating it with other information. Recently, you know, last year I helped a department chair at a large university land a deanship. And I shared many of these concepts with that person. That's a very success story because we were kind of walking this journey together as I was finishing the book, but I've done the research all along. What I would say is, you know, one of the people I interviewed, I've interviewed him a couple times, is Bill George, the former CEO of Medtronic in Minneapolis. And his book is on True North. And he just has another revision of his True North book focused on emerging leaders. And he and I've had several conversations about why what I'm doing is right on track. And so, and I really, again, he teaches at Harvard now, graduate program. And, you know, I just really feel like it's been endorsed. I have some really great endorsements on my book. And so that gives me confidence that I'm on the right track.
That's great. You know, chapter 8 is What Would Elmer Do? Who's Elmer?
Oh, very good. Well, I introduced Elmer at the very beginning, kind of dedicate the book to Elmer. Elmer was my main professional mentor, and I met him kind of coincidentally at a professional conference in about 1993. And we just hit it off, and I cultivated a relationship. He, at the time, his name is Dr. Elmer Burak, B-U-R-A-C-K. And at the time, he was the director of the PhD management program at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And Elmer died in 2011 at the age of 82. But I wouldn't have any of my books or major writing accomplishments if it weren't for Elmer. He coached me, he advised me, he turned me on to topics. And so I introduced him early in the book. And then the last chapter is What Would Elmer Do? Basically, Elmer lived almost he lived this book. He lived a breadcrumb legacy. He didn't call it that, but Elmer was a very disciplined person of the highest integrity who believed in relationships, who embraced his own mortality, who always kept his ego in check. I mean, he just lived every chapter. And so I kind of use that as kind of a, I use Elmer's life as a way to summarize all of the chapters as a conclusion.
Well, you've done a great job because the book has been very successful, and I know that you are continuing to make an impact in the lives. We're going to come back in a few minutes and tell where everybody can get your book and hit a couple of highlights on. We'll be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPower.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin, and all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation. 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free Silver American Eagle coin.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Remember, the HR Power Hour is podcast on all major podcast channels. We also hope that you'll listen to our station, WLOBRadio.com, WLOBRadio.com. Today, our guest is Dr. Jan Fried, and we're talking about her book, Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering. You know, it's been fun talking about this book, Jan. You've obviously done a lot of research, talked to a lot of people, and it's a great read. Tell me a little bit about what you think, after today's podcast, the three top things that people should get from the book and that you want to make sure that if somebody was thinking of picking it up, these are the top three reasons they should purchase it.
Well, I'm very proud of the content. And I think it's important to know that this book is written for everyone, every age and stage of life. So it's not just, as I said in the interview, we don't know when the end is. So we have to live today as if it matters. And so I think the book is for everyone, regardless of age or stage of life. It's for anyone at any level, because the most important person to lead is yourself. And I define a leader as anyone who's in the position to influence the lives of others. The book is very readable. And at the end of each chapter, there are what I call breadcrumb ingredients to help you integrate the concepts into your life, kind of practices or exercises. So I would say those are the takeaways.
That's awesome. And tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your history and how this has impacted your life.
Okay. So my first career was 30 years teaching at an undergraduate institution, teaching business management leadership. I loved it. But I would say, I like to say that I really like teaching, but I'm passionate about learning. So as long as I keep learning, and I do that through research and writing and coaching and speaking and workshops, and I just teach a graduate course. On my website, I have a monthly newsletter, and I also have a monthly podcast called Becoming a Sage, where if somebody subscribes, they would get my monthly podcast via email and a monthly letter that I think is easy to read. And so they can check out my website, janfried.com, two N's and two E's. The other good place to find me is LinkedIn. I do share a lot of things on LinkedIn. And I am on Facebook. I have a private Facebook group called Becoming a Sage for people just interested in, you know, wisdom, this kind of thing. So I'd love to have people check out my website, janfried.com.
Awesome. Now, you said you have six books. What are the six books that you have written, just for sake of interest to the audience?
Yeah. Well, two books on continuous improvement in higher education. One book on teaching and learning. The subtitle is called Shifting the Focus from Teaching to Learning, because, again, I think people spend too much time thinking about themselves as a teacher instead of thinking about the learners. I wrote a book on Mexican women leaders called Women of Yucatan, 30 Who Dare to Change Their World. That's a book of photographs and essays where my co-author and I, George Ann Huck, we went out and interviewed Mexican women leaders in the Yucatan and analyzed that data. And so I have a bilingual photography exhibit that's traveled around. That started traveling in 2000. It's not traveling now. It could, but I've been putting my energy into Breadcrumb Legacy. And then I mentioned during the interview, not Breadcrumb, but the previous book was Leading with Wisdom, Sage Advice from 100 Experts. So yeah, I've really been busy.
No, you really have. And I like, you know, I'm on the site, and it talks a little bit about an overview, and it says legacy can seem far off and out of reach, but it doesn't happen at journey's end. And it's not only for the rich and famous. Legacy is now, the book shows leaders how they can find and leave meaning on a daily basis. And I think, Dr. Fried, you've done a nice job of doing that with your book, Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering. And I appreciate you being on the show today.
I'm honored. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, Educational HR Radio. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.